So he married my oldest sister. She was beautiful, well-educated, Bible worker, in fact. But he met her at the moment when she was grieving the death of her fiancé. That was middle of the Second World War. Because he was not Adventist, this young man. However, she stood firm and she said, "I am not going to marry you unless you are Seventh-day Adventist. I am Seventh-day Adventist and that is where I stand." So, he studied. He was baptized. He was watchmaker. And after they were married, they came and lived with us in a village. And after the war, we were very poor. I told you these stories many times. But soon they decided to go to town themselves. They opened the business. And this brother-in-law of mine is probably one of the best watchmakers in the world. He taught me. I studied watchmaking with him. He taught me how to make watches. I'm not watch repairman. I'm watchmaker. So is he. Except I have not been doing that for a long time. Now he is about 87 or 88. And he needs no glasses to do the watches. And his hands are not shaking and he makes parts. So you can imagine this kind of quality of workmanship. And his business was booming very quickly. There was no watchmaker about 15,000 little town. So, he had money. And he knew what to do with money. He bought an apartment. No more rent. He bought a bicycle. Now let me tell you, a bicycle after Second World War and under communism is like a Mercedes now in the United States. So they bought new clothing and they were happy. Pretty soon their son was born, but money continued. Wealth, money, has a special power over us. Psychology studies it, ethics study it, philosophy study it, and it's something unique, something mysterious. Yeah, it can make us happy. But when it takes power over us, like my brother-in-law, all of a sudden, he became more self-assertive, more self-sufficient. He did not enjoy receiving too many suggestions, while before he was much more humble. So secretly he took some more liberties, some lifestyle choices before he had experience of baptism. But of course he knew how to hide stuff. Compromises. But blessings continued. And this is where we find people of God in Malachi chapter 3. We are in about 444 before Christ. It is the period when Nehemiah was sent to go to Jerusalem and Judea to restore what can be restored, to restore order, to restore the worship in the temple, to establish the government. He himself, Artaxerxes, made him a governor of Jerusalem and Judea. But after a few years, he had to return. And he was gone for about 2.5 or 3 years. But during that little window where there was no Nehemiah, and if you have time this afternoon, read the book of Nehemiah and see the methods he used to straighten up people of Israel. But he was gone. And life was going well. It was comfortable again, secure again, and starting with leaders secretly at first, then openly. They took more and more liberties, more and more freedoms in lifestyle, in business, and in worship. So that we can read in Malachi chapter 3, just verse 5 will tell us plenty of what was going around. If we have time, we should look and see chapter 1 and chapter 2, what it says about what was happening in Israel. Not just members, but leaders also. Verse 5 of Malachi chapter 3. Then I will draw near to you, says God, for judgment. I will be a swift witness against the sorcerers in Israel. Sorcerers, against the adulterers, against those who swear falsely, against those who oppress the hireling in his wages, the widow and the orphan, against those who thrust aside the sojourner and do not fear me, says the Lord of hosts. Yet, prosperity was advancing. So we can notice a pattern not only in Malachi chapter 3, but throughout the book and throughout our personal lives. During hardships, we cling to God. But when peace comes and prosperity comes, we cling to prosperity. Little by little, just a little bit here, a little bit there. So then we come even to my classes and ask, well, why do we have to do, and how about Rahab? Rahab lied. Why can't we lie? And why can't we steal like other people in the Bible stole? And I keep telling them, brothers and sisters, if you are going to imitate sins that are written in the Bible, you will reconstruct a perfect devil. Money. Apostle Paul writes in 1 Timothy to his young colleague, saying that chapter 6, verses 9 and 10, but those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from faith and pierced their heart with many pangs. Love of money. Being rich is no sin. Prosperity in itself is no sin. But what Malachi chapter 3 is telling us, watch it. Watch it because of this uncanny strength, power that money has. So I looked a little bit into professional literature, and here are 4 or 5 points that psychologists and ethicists identify. The first of all, most of them say, money gives power to buy things. I remember when I came to United States for the first time. So many different things. I would go to stores, grocery stores. I have never seen so many nicely polished apples and pears and cabbages and cans of food and huge stores. We had little stores even in big towns, and most of the shelves were empty. And they would announce when potatoes have arrived to town. But here, I was in California, I go and it was plenty of stuff. Prosperity. My eyes became huge. But I was penniless. I just came to marry my future bride. So first weeks, boy, did I admire all kinds of things. I didn't know what to do with big cars. I think it's useless to have so much air inside the cabin and to have 8 cylinders to pull so much metal. I really didn't know why is that necessary. But I understand that there are some people who are taller than me, so they need more space. So money gives us power to buy. But then also much more temptations to spend. Money gives us sense of self-worth. I was following my brother-in-law, who was working for Searle Pharmaceuticals and visiting physicians, and I listened to his conversation with one of physicians, and that physician says to him, "Dick, do you know how much this, my colleague, is worth?" Oh, I was listening. He said, $2 million minimum. That was new to me. I didn't know that people in America had a price tag. I had 2 pennies in my pocket. So how much am I worth? But you see what this strange thing does to us. I tell you, you're worth nothing less than millionaires and billionaires in this world. Your and my worth is not expressed in finances, in money. Money is not the central thing, central value in human life. Money also offers a sense of independence, and it feels good. It feels good when you're a young man, young lady, you get married, and you finally have enough money, and you don't need help anymore from your parents. But it becomes also kind of dangerous. We got married, so we moved back to France, where I was still studying. My father-in-law calls and says, "Son, how are you doing?" "Fine." "Do you have enough food?" I said, "Yeah." And immediately to my mind came, this independent mind came, "Do you think I cannot feed your daughter?" "Are you warm?" I said, "Yeah." I didn't tell him that I took his California daughter to the mountains. We were in Alps with the snow, and I was sawing down some dry trees, and I taught her how to sew the tree, the piece of wood like this, put against the stomach, and here is the saw, and then she pumps it like that. And that makes wood warm you up at least twice. It's more efficient. And then he says, "When did you have ice cream last?" I said, "Dad, this is freezing here. You don't eat ice cream in California. You can do it all the time. When did you go to listen to symphony last time?" I said, "Almost every Wednesday." I didn't tell him that students could listen to Radio Swiss Romand in Geneva for 10 cents on Wednesdays. Can you imagine when a few weeks later I received a letter and inside a check to $1,500? And I was upset. But unfortunately, we have to be Christians even when we are upset. So I call him back and I said, "Dad, what is this all about?" He says, "Well, I know that you are happy and everything, but I just felt that maybe you might need it. But Dad, I didn't ask for it." He says, "I know." I said, "We have everything we need. I know that too." I said, "When am I going to pay you back?" But he says, "But this is not a lending. This is a gift." I said, "Well, who has money to throw around $1,500? That was in 1974, 5. He says, "I'm not throwing money." But I said, "Dad, I don't need it." He says, "I need it." I said, "Yes, I'll send it back to you." But then he says, "No, I need you to accept me as your dad." And I sensed he had something here. And then all of a sudden, I had something here. And I just mumbled, "Thank you, I love you." Money gives us independence, but sometimes too much independence from our parents, and sometimes too much independence from our parent in heaven as well. And we forget from where all of those things come, because we wonder whether we are not so wonderful that we don't need God anymore. And that is when some Christian ethicists say, money becomes our God. The problem with money, though, they remind us, is that there is never enough of money. Never enough. People kill for money, people prostitute themselves for money. People who have over $2 million, $3 million salary per year hoard a $1 million Christmas bonus. And you know where it comes from, your and my account. See what happened? Needs are replaced with wants. I have a book entitled Hunger for More. And the author says that many times we have never enough, and in fact we want to have more. More than people across the street, more than brother and sister, more than my parents. Never enough. Money is a blessing. But God in Malachi chapter 3 is telling us, be careful with it. Be careful. Greed is another disorder that comes from money. And the definition of greed is that it is an exaggerated want for money that belongs to other person. Robbing others. My wife is here, but I'm going to say it anyway. What Malachi tells us in chapter 3 is that when we do not return what belongs to God, it is, let me see, the highest high-handed robbery ever performed. And yet, God knows our vulnerability, the subtlety of the power of money. So He wants to teach us, He wants to help us, He wants to save us. So He claims 1%, even though 100% is His. Because we can do nothing without Him. Nothing. Will I shock you if I tell you that we cannot even sin without God's help? Those who torture and kill and rape and so on, do it while the blood pressure continues and heartbeat continues and lung continues, everything, and God could turn off with a switch. But this is why God, through tithe and through many other ways, tries to teach us to be responsible with what we receive from Him. He knows our vulnerability. So, He claims 1/10. But what for? He is rich. Three things. He wants to remind us that every cent really belongs to Him. That we cannot earn unless He gives us strength and opportunity and health. Secondly, He asks everybody to remember the tenth. For several years, I am serving as a coordinator for Yugoslavian churches in North America, which means that I try to mediate between churches and conferences, and I go and visit and discuss things with them. And there are quite a few Yugoslavs who moved from there and came here and became very rich. And I remember once sitting at a table, and one of them was very upset with their pastors because their pastors don't do their business the way they should. And you know, when you have money, then you get power, then you think you are specialist in everything. So I listened to him and suggestion he has for the pastor, and then, so I was listening with patience and so on, but the concluding thing was like a sting of scorpion. He says, I pay him, and I think he should listen to me. Boy. I really asked for grace. I said, you are paying him. Yes, I give tithe. Well, I said, so do I. And so does pastor. And he says, I was a businessman, a watchmaker, and I had money. And I know what money and independence means. And I would never be a pastor if you would pay me to be a pastor. You don't pay tithe. You return what belongs to God. And the responsibility of the pastor is to use it the way he knows best. But just like he makes mistake in his work, you make mistake in your work, except you do not ask pastor and disclose everything to the pastor so that he can tell you a few things. We were friends and we remained friends. But God wants us all, pastors, administrators, members, rich and poor, all of us, to contribute to the third thing, and that is His project, the plan of salvation. In our time, in our lifespan, God asks us to assure that it can go, because He wants to protect us from the corrosive power of money. And I must share with you something. Last quinquennium, I was member of a special commission at General Conference called Use of Tithe Commission. And all the leaders from all divisions were there, treasurers from all divisions, and I was invited as expert in ethics, and I was told that my microphone will always be on, which means that whenever I feel I should speak, I should speak. And I should speak out my mind. Because the books were opened. And the policies were opened. And there were some changes. And there were some resistances, but the changes were made anyway. But there were some things that needed to be streamlined. For example, let me just give you one example. Let's suppose that a union in southern part of the United States has too much tithe for the amount of workers. Now, according to Bible and Spirit of Prophecy, tithe money can be used for nothing else but what the tithe is given for. Offerings serve for other things. Now you can imagine that the union can have too much tithe, but not enough offering money. So then the policy says that if there is anywhere in the world a union that doesn't have enough money for pastors, but has plenty of money for offerings, it's called the exchange. Exchange of tithe and exchange of offerings. And this is controlled professional organizations who are not Seventh-day Adventists are auditing these kind of things. And I tell you, after these 5 years, and when we wrote a conclusion, and just not long time ago, I received all the minutes and the decisions in a book binding, I felt proud of my church. So my brother-in-law woke up one Sabbath morning at 3 o'clock a.m., police was telling him through the window to get dressed and to follow them. Now, you never knew what would happen. Communism was young. It was 1947, 48 about. And my sister started crying, but silently. The baby was sleeping. He got dressed when he went out. The police told him, "Your shop was robbed." So they run. He goes there. The window was broken. The light, they put on the light. And they told him, don't move anything until we tell you. So he opened the drawer where watches were. Over 100 repaired, good watches were stolen. None of those watches were his watches that he was selling. They all belonged to people. 100 good watches. All the money he saved. I need to tell you also, there were no savings banks. And there were no banks for people. So where did we keep our money? I'm not going to tell you because you will take them. Everybody knew where to hide their money. So he hid the money, but these guys knew where to find it, and it was all in Deutschmarks, in German marks. All money gone. And of course, he was shaking for fear. So he came home. Watches gone, money gone, expensive equipment gone. In shock. But his wife and he went to church. He was only crying all the time. She was trying to calm him down, but he was always, all the time crying. So finally she was suspicious. She says, "Why are you crying?" She says, "I'll tell you later." Well, between Sabbath school and worship, he came with pastor in front of the church. And there he confessed. And he said, "I was cheating God big time. God was giving me increase and I was keeping my tithe steady." And he says, "I think God came for what belonged to Him." And he asked the church for forgiveness. And he asked the pastor for forgiveness. And the church was crying. "Bring the full tithe," says God. "Put me to test," says God. Then he talks about open windows through which blessings flow. And then he says, "I will protect your fields. I will protect your shops." And pastor talked to me yesterday afternoon. I said, "No problem, I'm going to go through my sermons." I was sure I had sermon on Malachi 3. And I didn't. But I was so sure of it that I was helping, preparing for Sabbath, and so on. And only after supper, I went down to my office, and I went through my sermons that are in Croatian, through my sermons in French, to my sermons in English, not one anything from Malachi. Pastors don't like to talk about tithes and offerings, because it looks like fundraising. But the passage is in Scripture. And the program is ready. So I worked on it last night until about 9:20. And I had fever almost. I had all kinds of ideas, but I didn't know how to put them together. So I sit in a car and I went and I took a ride on Hinchman Road. And coming back, the moon was shining into my... And with the shining of the moon, things kind of came together. I went back and I finished by about... Not completely finished. I finished it this morning completely. But the whole sermon came together. And I realized in preparing this sermon several things that I knew somewhere in my mind. But I realize now that I feel need for protection from my wants. I feel a need for that. That I need to remember that every cent is God's. Really? That I need to support God's rescue mission. And that I need to be faithful in my ministry because God watches. So, they caught them, the thieves, as they were crossing into Germany. And guess what? They all watches were there, and all money was there, and they were put to prison. God says, test me. And I hope we will not just test, we will trust Him.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.AmericanChristianMinistry.org. There you will discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. You can trust ACM. There's no compromise here. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with the speakers and volunteer workers to encourage you. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He is coming soon.